It's time for an episode of the Imbalanced History of Rock and Roll. I'm Ray Koob.
I'm Marcus Goldman.
And we're brought to you, as always, by Crooked Eye Brewery in the heart of Hatboro, pouring the cure for what ails you since 2014. And this time around, Marcus, we're going to take a journey in the imbalanced time machine back to the 70s, dude.
Yeah, Ray, we've talked about the 70s quite a bit. And as the 60s rolled into the 70s, it was a very important time for rock and roll. You had a lot of branches growing and getting stronger in that right. Big, huge rock and roll tree. It's really interesting how some of the different sounds evolved and how now today we categorize them the way we do.
Back then, they were just doing what they were feeling, including a couple kids who met at Bard College. It's the story you always hear about, oh, it didn't really happen that way, did it? You know, like Keith and Mick on the platform at Dartford, Kent, but it did. Hey, that sounds pretty good, man. What are you doing over there? Oh, I'm just playing my guitar. I mean, it was simple as that, right? And then they decided to get together and play some music.
Yeah, basically, yeah, he's like one like one sound.
Oh, before we go too far, we should tell them who they are. They are Donald Fagen and the late, great Walter Becker, the core of Steely Dan, the subject of this episode on the podcast. We always start to dance all over before we tell them what the hell we're doing here. It's kind of why it's an imbalanced history.
This band, Steely Dan, is often mentioned in the yacht rock category when...
I protest!
I agree. I'm not really a big fan of the name. I mean, it's fun. Don't get me wrong. It's fun. And their music is great. But they're such a jazzy rock and roll band. And that's how we've always looked at them.
I don't always like the convenient tags like yacht rock. There are some artists that probably fit into that category. Steely Dan has a category unto themselves. And part of the fun starts at the very beginning after they meet and start having these fun jam sessions, right? They got to come up with a name. That's part of the story.
Yeah, the name came from a William Burroughs novel called Naked Lunch, which if you like reading weird stuff, I highly recommend you read it. I read it in my 20s.
When I started writing Naked Lunch, people offered their opinions. Disgusting, they said. Pornographic, un-American trash. Unpublishable. Well, it came out in 1959, and it found an audience. Town meetings, book burnings, and an inquiry by the state Supreme Court. That book made quite a little impression.
It's about time. It's been a while. And if you haven't seen the movie with Peter Weller, you have to see the movie. Peter Weller's character acting is fantastic in it. But there is a revolutionary steam-powered dildo.
That's right. He said dildo on the Imbalanced History of Rock and Roll. Proceed.
Yeah, we're not talking about the Hobbit and Bilbo Baggins. Oh. We're talking about the revolutionary steam-powered dildo mentioned in William Burroughs' novel Naked Lunch.
Steely Dan. All about the arts. Like so much of what we talk about on this podcast, a bunch of guys who love music and the arts, and they're studying that in college. Bard, a great college, happened to be the place where these two met and started a path together that lasted until Walter passed away just a few years ago.
And we've been very fortunate to be able to enjoy their string of seven outstanding albums from 72 to 1980. I mean, a ridiculous discography. The only one that did not go platinum in those first seven is Countdown to Ecstasy, which is still a great record.
I want to get into each record one by one as we do from time to time, but I want to talk a little bit about those early days before they became Steely Dan. And we both came across the soundtrack for You Gotta Walk It Like You Talk It, right? The soundtrack mm-hmm. to a wacky movie. Hey, you gotta walk it, just like you talk it. I'll be sure you're gonna lose that beat. And that's kind of where they cross paths with Gary Katz, who was the producer of the soundtrack album, and they did incidental music and a few songs, and some of those songs would show up in different forms on Steely Dan albums down the line. But that was kind of the beginning of them doing it and going, hey, look, we're making some money.
And they really enjoyed writing songs together, and they seemed to have a really good chemistry and something unique. Guys who were definitely not mainstream by any means, definitely fringe guys who had a lot of questions about things.
You know, Gary Katz was just the guy to come along for them and help answer some of those questions, refine some of those edges, and free some of the minds that needed to get looser to make what would become Steely Dan. I see him as an integral part of the whole thing, along with the other players that would come along. They tried the Brill Building thing. Didn't really work out the way they thought it would. They did this movie thing, and they got a little attention. They were in a couple groups together. What were they? The Don Fagen Jazz Trio. Appearing nightly here at the Holiday Inn. The Bad Rock Group. And later, they called themselves the Leather Canary, featuring a drummer. Yes, that drummer, Chevy Chase.
Drop your shorts and bend over, Mr. Babar.
We don't want to do that.
Say, you know, my kidneys feel a lot better in this position. Maybe it's just that I'm not doing any calisthenics. You know, if I did some sit-ups in the morning or bent over like this, I'd probably feel 100% better. Moon River. Whew. Thank you, Doc. You ever serve time?
I had heard about that, and that's kind of a wild indicator to how things kind of were going in the 1970s as the decade began. Real quick, before we start jumping into the albums, Marcus, that album, You Gotta Walk It Like You Talk It, kind of a good title track, and aside from some of the incidental music, Dog Eat Dog's a real good track to check out if you're out there searching on the music services for stuff from that album.
Dog eat dog eat dog.
And a couple people in the mix for those sessions end up in future sessions, including Denny Diaz, who would play on the next few albums inside what would become Steely Dan. Funny, they say the 1970s was the album decade, and it's hard to argue when you see a band come out with a debut album on ABC Records, ladies and gentlemen, and there's a whole story behind that. And they get not one, but two huge hits out of it.
Like a castle in its corner, in a medieval game, I foresee terrible trouble, and I stay here just the same.
I'm a fool to do your dirty work, oh yeah.
People heard Do It Again, or Reeling in the Years, or Dirty Work. Really, that's like three, right?
Yeah, those three are still staples on rock radio. Every once in a while, you'll get another one of the songs on a deep cut on like a block party weekend. But yeah, those three songs still getting played, and really
true.
Great songs. Dirty Work is beautiful and it's moving, and their sound, even on that first record, is so clean, I guess would be the best way I could describe it. Is it's some of the cleanest rock and roll I have ever heard at this point.
Shout out to Jerome Richardson with that amazing saxophone on Dirty Work. There's two riffs on this album that are instantly identifiable with Steely Dan. Do It Again. So cool, so smooth, starting off the album, right?
Mm-hmm.
Huge hit. But when they dig in for the solo to start reeling in the ears, oh man, you know this band's going to be doing another album, and probably a lot more than that. And that's exactly what starts to happen for Steely Dan behind all the airplay for these songs.
Your everlasting summer, you can see it fading fast. So you grab a piece of something.
something that you think is gonna last. Well, you wouldn't even know a diamond if you held it in your hand. The things you think are precious, I can't understand.
Are you reeling in the years, stowing away the time? Are you gathering up the tears? Have you had enough of mine? Are you reeling in?
It's a lot of firepower for a band that's just getting started, and ABC Records is making the most of it, helping to transition their identity from what they'd been from their founding in the 50s.
A lot of small labels took big chances with bands like Steely Dan in the late 60s and early 70s as they transitioned out of some of those formats that weren't working as well, and they were moving with the times. And obviously the people at those smaller labels saw the value of album rock as well.
Artist development was fueled by the funds that they would make on their big name acts. Aside from putting aside profits, they would invest in new artists. And artist development often led to, as we've talked about, 2-3 albums before a band really starts to become commercially viable. That's not the case here. They've got hits on the radio right away and a lot of talent in the studio. And the talent in the studio is going to change as our story changes here on this episode, all about Steely Dan on the Imbalance History. Let's talk about Countdown to Ecstasy and how it's different than the first record, but still was a success despite its lesser sales, because of the cool factor that it added to their image on AOR radio, which at this point was really beginning to kick in every major market. Stations were starting to get traction and listeners, and a lot of that was fueled by the music. And I'm talking about Showbiz Kids singing about Las Vegas, right?
Mm-hmm.
The thumb your nose at everybody of my old school. But my favorite on this second record really has to be Bodhisattva. It just cooks and it goes and makes you feel like this band could do anything. Denny Diaz is there. Skunk Baxter, also part of the backbone of the band on guitar. Becker switching between guitar and bass and singing with whoever else was willing to sing.
Bodhisattva is such a great tune, and the one off of this album that I remember the most, the one that I've heard on the radio the most, and My Old School is another great song, as is Showbiz Kids, but Bodhisattva is the one that I still continue to hear on the regular on rock radio. And again, their music has aged really, really well. And if you look back at some of our previous episodes where we talk about albums released 50 years ago.
Yeah.
I mean, the list of albums that these guys released with and they still went platinum tells you how good their music was and is.
Well, that episode for 1974 just happened, and Ricky Don't Lose That Number, a number 4 hit for Steely Dan, really solidifies Pretzel Logic and them, their identity as major dudes, and as any major dude will tell you, my friend, you got to sell some records. And they did. And they did it with Life on the Road, which would not last forever in the history of Steely Dan. Most bands become road dogs. But as they achieved this success in 74, came the end of their road dogging. Now, there's a lot of reasons that have been discussed through the decades about it. A lot of it has to do with the artist's uncomfortableness with being on stage in front of people. It's a real thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
They didn't just make it up, right?
No, the lead singer of XTC had horrendous...
Andy Partridge, yes, yep. He does. Same thing.
And he gets very, very uncomfortable on stage.
Well, think about this. For any artist, you're really making it big, and you're fighting this, and you finally say, okay, we're doing well enough. Everybody got enough? Okay, we're going to keep making records, right? All right, we're stopping the road. But I really think they just wanted to stay home. It's pretzel logic, and it makes sense in their heads.
I believe that the road life was too hard for them, and for the way that they put their albums together with the preciseness and the detail,
right,
to be able to duplicate that sound night in and night out after traveling on a bus all day, all night, and not sleeping well and being rushed to radio promos and doing all of that stuff. I think that aspect took away from their feeling of how they wanted to perform live, or maybe what they thought their live performances should be. And they were very, very intense in the studio. If you listen to their albums closely, you can hear the beautiful cleanliness of their sound just flows. Each of their albums flows all the way through.
And the core of the band remains in a different batch of people from the Wrecking Crew and otherwise. Session people start to get involved in the making of this record. It's something that becomes essential moving forward. Timothy B. Schmidt, Michael LaMarche, David Paich, you know, big guys, Dean Parks from the Crew, Wilton Felder and Chuck Rainey, all contributing. Now, the biggest contributor was the one and only Jim Gordon. He played every track except one. And of course, that's him creating the soundscape with the band on Ricky Don't Lose That Number.
You tell yourself you're not my kind, but you don't even know you're mine. And you could have a change of heart. Ricky, don't lose that number. You don't want to call nobody else. Send it.
You've got to go back and listen to our previous episode about the life of Jim Gordon. Joel Selvin did a great job telling this story, and you have to hear it because Jim Gordon's drumming is exceptional. Everywhere he played, he was exceptional.
More of the Steely Dan story next on the Imbalanced History of Rock and Roll. Well, Marcus, the seasons are changing and the board is changing at Crooked Eye, because you know what happens. You always have your standards there on the left side. If you look at it on social media, you know exactly what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah, their pictures lay it out very clearly for you what they've got. So
keep your eye on that, sure. But on the right side of the board, that's where the spring ales and the new stuff that Jeff's been working on starts coming out and making its way into your glass right there at the bar at Crooked Eye Brewery in the heart of Hapro, pouring the cure for over 10 years now, just celebrating their 10th anniversary. The party's still going on over there. You know that, man, right?
The party never stops at Crooked Eye with live music, great entertainment, with just things happening at Crooked Eye, the great beers, the great drinks. It never stops.
And get that Salty Vets barbecue on select nights. You can find out about everything going on at Crooked Eye Brewery on their Facebook and other social media accounts. And thanks to them always for sponsoring us here on the podcast. Always a friend to be made. when you make a crooked eye.
Hello, Pantheon podcast listeners. Christian Swain here to tell you more about my experience with Raycon earbuds. Our family now has three pairs of Raycon earbuds around the house, and my wife just grabbed a pair of the Headphone Pros to replace some headphones from a company that was double the price. And yes, she loves them. Now, if you haven't pulled the trigger on a pair of Raycons, or even if you have but you're in the market for another pair because they're just that good, well, now is the time to check them out, because they just launched their upgraded model of the best-selling everyday earbuds. With Raycon's upgraded everyday earbuds, now you also get active noise cancellation, ergonomic design, and multi-point connectivity that lets you pair with two devices at once. New quick charge function, three customizable sound styles, plus awareness mode. Available in a variety of vibrant new colors to complement any and all skin tones. I even have a pair of earbuds in a cool green color. I have tried just about every earbud known to humankind, and these Raycons are fantastic. Seriously, if you've been wanting to check out Raycons, there truly is no better time. You're going to ask yourself why you didn't check them out sooner, and Raycon offers a 30-day happiness guarantee. So, what are you waiting for? Go to buyraycon.com/pantheon today to get 20% off your Raycon order, plus free shipping. That's right, you'll get 20% off and free shipping at buyraycon.com/pantheon. buyraycon.com/pantheon.
But he's got classic guys on there too, like Klass Johnson and Ernie Watts, and Jeff Porcaro is on there. That's just such a great crew backing up the band. And the album, well, it sells. We were talking about how the second record didn't really do so great in the sales department then or now, I guess, comparatively. But here we are, Pretzel Logic, turning it all around in 1974, released 50 years ago. And leading us around to 1975's Katie Lied.
Biscayne Bay, where the Cuban gentlemen sleep all day. I went searching for the song you used to sing.
Now, this is the beginning of the two becoming the Dan. You know what I'm talking about?
It was basically them with other musicians from here on out.
That couldn't have made Denny Diaz, who'd been at least a part of all the records so far on there. He did one solo. And Rick Derringer's on there. Dean Parks again. And Elliot Randall back to the beginning, right? Hugh McCracken and Larry Carl. It's like an all-star for guitars there. All these amazing players working with Walter and Donald to fulfill their vision. Hal Blaine playing drums on Any World That I'm Welcome To. Such an amazing song, which introduces Michael McDonald's voice to things.
It's better than the one I come from. Any world that I'm welcome to. There's no life. Any world that I'm welcome to. I got to move on now. Any world that I'm welcome to. Any world will do.
And Jeff Porcaro played drums on the rest of the tracks on this record. I mean, the talent is off the hook.
Sick. And you know, I know I said it before, but there's Gary Katz sitting there at the helm with his fingers crossed, listening to the final mixes, grinning like a Cheshire cat every time, probably. He even knew what he had on the second record, and historically he wasn't wrong. Just an amazing beginning run for these guys, and now the mysterious imagery of them not touring. you didn't see them live, you might never see them now, right? Wasn't that the word on the street?
Oh, yeah. They made it very clear at that time that they were done touring, as I flashed the quotes. But at that time, they were, and nobody believed that they would be playing live. I don't know a single fan of their music at that time through the 80s growing up who ever thought about seeing them live. We were going to tons of concerts, and Steely Dan was never even mentioned as a possibility, because by then we had resigned to the fact that they ain't ever playing live.
And that's where I was too, because my concert going kind of started when they stopped. So I always was like, well, that ship has sailed. They don't have to. They never will.
Oh, yeah. And we knew then in the 80s how much money they were making off their radio royalties and how much they were making from their songs being played constantly.
Let's talk about the tunes. On Katie Lied, released in March of 75, they had established themselves in everybody's mind. They were radio darlings. Everybody but the promoters who did shows, I guess. They could be an exception to who maybe didn't feel that way. I know I was totally nuts about them from the little bit I'd heard before I started collecting their albums, which is what starts to happen to me.
I love listening to them, and they were one of the bands that I listened to rock radio for back then.
And that's why Black Friday, the way it kind of like fades in, and then takes off for an energy ride. That's why it's such a big part of classic rock radio, right?
Such a great song, man. It just gets you right away, and you're like, whoa, and it pulls you in.
Hey, you were talking about yacht rock earlier, and I'm going to give you one concession on the yacht rock thing, all right? Because when you sing about bad sneakers and a pina colada, my friend, you risk being considered in that category in the future, even if the category hasn't been invented yet.
That's hilarious. Absolutely. That goes into the yacht rock category. Or the boat rock.
I don't know. But I'll tell you one thing. It was established at this time that Daddy don't live in that New York City no more. No more. Love that song.
Everyone's Gone to the Movies, another great one.
Song. You know what it is? They established feels. And sometimes from one song to the next, it could range widely. I just love them, man. At this point, they're all over me. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
And then the ultimate Steely Dan album hits us end of March 76. Can't tell you how much the Royal Scam means to me. I can hear any part of it anytime. Stop. Listen. Middle of song to the middle of the next song. Stop. It doesn't matter. And I know most people go, oh yeah, Kid Charlemagne, great tune. That, to me, while the biggest hit, may be the least of the songs that they put on this record. And now it's official. All the credits are Don and Walter. And then, hey, everybody.
And yeah, Timothy B. Schmidt, Michael McDonald doing some backing vocals there again as well.
Yeah, they've all become regulars. Denny Diaz is in the house for some work, and Larry Carlton. Don Gralnick, who was great. He used to tour with Jackson Brown a lot. He's in the studio for that one. And Elliot Randall again. A lot of the same faces there, but some different people too, you know? It's great.
No Skunk anymore either, though.
Well, at this point, he's off doing the Doobie Brothers full time. Secret work for the CIA, I guess. But this album, just every song. The Caves of Altamira, which had been floated back when they did that movie soundtrack, gets a full treatment and is really great with John Klemmer on saxophone. And I love them all. Don't Take Me Alive, Signing Stranger. Folks are in a line around the block. Just to see her do that con-con shock. You zombie, be born again, my friend. Won't you sign in the stranger? Yeah, I'm just a nut about this record. And the Fez, which is really cool and laid back and all, I think it just makes the whole thing kind of, you know, kind of close up there at the end of side one.
Mm-hmm.
And side two, a lot of people go, yeah, I don't really know those songs, but they're ingrained in me right down to the last fading notes of the Royal Scam. Just love it, man.
Steely Dan, such a great band. Easy to listen to.
It's also the time for me, 75, 76, was all about that kind of music. And the end of high school, starting my adventure into the world, which had begun full flight by the time they put out Asia in the fall of 77.
This is the album that really got me into Steely Dan. As soon as this came out, I started hearing Deacon Blues and Josie on the radio.
Right.
And once I started hearing those songs, I started noticing more and more of them on the radio. But yeah, these were the songs that I first remember being, hey, Steely Dan. Woo, cool band.
Well, you picked an excellent entry point, my friend. That's all I'm going to say, right? Look, they start putting together teams for each song. Gary Katz has this under control somehow. But there's going to be a different team for each song. So they're going to do a session just for Black Cow, which starts the album. And these musicians are going to add what they need to and keep doing it and mixing, etc., till they get it done. Some of those people and a whole lot of other people are going to come in and do the next song, the title track, Asia, a masterpiece in and of itself, because the work of the great Wayne Shorter drives it past all known limits for Steely Dan at this point. And I don't know about you, Marcus, but I think for a lot of people, Deacon Blues really becomes the biggest it's been over the last 15, 20 years versus back at the beginning, even though it was a huge hit. If you know what I'm saying, everybody knows that song now. At least it feels that way to me.
It's one that makes you smile and just kind of hang out and sip on that drink when you're listening to it. Yes. It's got that easy, jazzy, beachy, chill vibe to it. My back to the wall, a victim of laughing chance. This is for me, the essence of true romance. Sharing.
So then you flip it over, because that's what we had to do in those days. Get up, here, hold the joint, and I went and flipped over to side B of Asia. And it starts with Peg, a funky little number that really caught on and became a big hit at the time. I guess, I think it even got him on top 40.
Oh, yeah. And the high school, our friends, older brothers and sisters were listening to this album a lot. So we ended up hearing it a lot more when we were at our friends' houses playing because their older brothers and sisters were listening.
And you got Don Gralnick mixing it up in there with Tom Scott on keyboards, Steve Kahn, a different flavor on guitar, and the ever-present Michael McDonald, who is now in both bands, Steely Dan and the Doobie Brothers, essentially, recording with both of them. I'd say an accidental hit that just keeps getting bigger. It was top 40 inclusion at the time, but now it's just that evergreen classic rock song. But these last couple are my favorites, and I don't know that they're the biggest songs, even though they're the closers on side two. Home at Last really shows the jazzy side of this record. And maybe it's the combination of Victor Feldman on piano and vibes and Bernard Purdy on drums. A little different flavor in there that helps to bring that home, but that's one of my favorites, you know?
And the ever-present Timothy B. Schmidt on backing vocals for this one as well. His voice adds so much to every song that he sings on.
He can do what a producer or a bandmate, an artist, asks for. He's very talented that way and always has been known for that too. Hey, I got the news. Steely Dan just took over the world in 1977 and 78. And this song kept their radio roll going, and it features all the normal characters all working together on I Got the News. And that leads to Josie, the final song on Asia, like almost like a kiss over your shoulder on your way out the door from a great record, a great friend. Wow, I can't say enough about this record. And if I was Gary Katz and I had the cash, I would say, you know what, guys, that's it. I can't do another goddamn thing that's going to top that. But he did. This is where the complications come in, where ABC Records, which has been their label through all different kind of configurations from the beginning for a long time, until 1979, when the powers that be decided that they were going to sell the whole thing to MCA Records, which at the time had the reputation of being known as the Music Cemetery of America, but that changed. MCA proper changed. And the addition of the ABC Records stable of artists really changed the vision and direction for that company. But ABC Records, as it was an amazing thing. We could talk about that for an hour in and of itself, back to the 60s, you know, the Steppenwolf and the Mamas and the Papas and everybody who was on ABC. But it all kind of comes screeching to an end there. And believe it or not, despite their role and stature within the company, our boys Steely Dan are kind of hanging in the lurch, right?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they went in the studio right away when the cycle felt right, and they had the songs to start recording Gaucho, which would be their seventh album, released in November of 1980, but on MCA, with no mention of ABC, as far as I remember or can tell. Didn't matter. They were Steely Dan. They were delivering the goods, right? Once again.
Another fantastic album. At this point, people were probably begging that these guys go hit the road live so they can see these songs live. I bet they were getting postcards and letters every day saying, please go on the road. Please go on the road. Your albums are so good. We need to see these songs live. We need to hear these songs live. At this point, I couldn't believe that they hadn't played live in like 6 years, and they just keep releasing these freaking brilliant albums. Song after song is just so good.
You get Gaucho eventually, after all the hand-wringing and back and forth. And you get Babylon Sisters. And Hey 19, there's your highlighter for Yacht Rock, right?
Yep.
But Glamour Profession and Gaucho, great songs. Time Out of Mind, one of my favorite songs that they wrote in that period. And it closes with My Rival. Not as big for radio purposes. And then at the end, probably my favorite song on this album, Third World Man. And it makes some impact, but not like top 40. I guess some with Hey 19. That was a pretty big song that year. I don't know. It seemed like they'd kind of run their course a little bit, maybe. And I hate to say it because they're one of my favorite bands of all time. But maybe that's what leads to getting on the road, spending some time. A lot of time passed there. And you go out and you go on the road for a few months here and a few months there. Start recording, and you get it the way you want it before you put it out. Which is why Alive in America was a great choice for a live album. They picked the best stuff from all over. And here it is, kids.
The fact that they had all those great soundboard recordings is fantastic as well, and we're lucky.
By the 90s, their technology and recording abilities had greatly increased, and they put together a really solid band to take to the road. I guess we just never thought we'd see them. We never thought that there'd be a Steely Dan live album, of course. And I figured, well, they seem to have kind of like just kind of run out of highway. Does that make sense?
It definitely makes sense.
So when they started talking about going back in the studio again and making another album, oh, the spidey senses started to tingle in my house, buddy. It took a while. They had time. They had the luxury of time in a studio. But in early 2000, it's two against nature. It kind of feels like the whole thing has come around to this, even though they've had so much success all along. And there's some of the usual suspects involved, like Dean Parks and Hugh McCracken. But a lot of different players are on this record as well, playing different parts to comprise this really cool record, in my opinion.
I have not listened to this album in many years. Vinnie Colaiuta is playing drums on one of the songs on this album, Negative Girl. It is a really, really excellent album that didn't get radio play. I think it was hard for bands that are considered classic rock when they release new albums or new music to get played on the radio, but critically, it got rave reviews. It won 4 Grammys. Album of the Year, Best Pop Vocal Album, Best Engineered Album that wasn't classical, and Best Pop Performance by a Duo or Group with Vocals.
All righty, any Grammy goes to Two Against Nature, Steely Dan.
Thanks very much. We've been around a long time. It's nice to get one of these. Thanks to my family, my wife, Libby Titus. Thank you very much.
Thanks to our fans and to Sa and Kavai. Thank you very much.
People are just so goddamn glad to have them back, you know. Here, take all the Grammys this year, right? I mean, Cousin Dupree got some airplay, but it really was one for the fans. And you can't blame them for doing what they want at this point, you know. And then the appropriately named 9th studio album, Everything Must Go, released in June of 2003. Basically, they put it all out there. Just, again, let themselves do what they wanted to do, what they felt. And it had a different feeling from the big hit albums of the 70s and different from Two Against Nature. It's just them being who they are, doing it their way. And by the way, that last album and this one, producing themselves without the great Gary Katz. But everything must go, Marcus. And it all went. I love them so much. One of the neat things that they did that we almost forgot to talk about happened in 1978. We work on the FM band. There was a movie called FM. The original movie soundtrack included an original song from Steely Dan. On there were Night Moves from Bob Seger, which was a huge song on the radio when this movie was released. And some of the other hits of the time from people like Steve Miller and Tom Petty. Randy Meisner had a solo thing. The Eagles were on there too, right? Mm-hmm. And Do It Again was part of the soundtrack, so they made a little off of that. But FM, no static at all. Puts them on radio everywhere, you know, between albums for them.
It was a lot more common for bands back then to release a single that would show up on a soundtrack, but you couldn't get it on the album. And then they would do a reissue of the album after its first release.
Or put it on their greatest hits.
Or put it on their greatest hits or do it something like that. So it was an interesting time, and labels took a lot of chances with songs back then.
Exploration was part of the deal. No matter what. You know, they say the atmosphere has to be right, and Gary Katz kept that on track for them through all the changes, including the move from ABC being absorbed into MCA and all that. And you can't underestimate his importance and his role as the third guy through all of it. Together, those guys and an army, a literal rock and roll army, created a sensation of music that'll be remembered forever, because digital and shit now, we ain't ever losing this stuff we had. A lot of music and a lot of art, a lot of films got lost from about 100 years ago because digital wasn't to the point where it was. We ain't losing any of this. We may have lost Walter Becker. He died of cancer September 3rd, 2017. Got to be 7 years this September. That starts to get to be a long time. Much missed, I'm sure, by his friends and family the most. Enjoy the music. It gave us all the joy it gave us when it was new, and it still does today. I don't know about for everybody else, but it sure as hell does for me.
Absolutely. I still love listening to their music. It's always such a nice, pleasant groove.
Well, we're always in a groove here on the Imbalanced History of Rock and Roll. You can vibe in, see what I'm doing there, by sending us an email to imbalancedhistory@gmail.com or checking in on any of the social media platforms except
TikTok.
Yep, no TikTok.
No.
Thanks to our friends at Crooked Eye Brewery, pouring the cure for what ails you, and so much more. So many great things going on there at the brewery location. Find them online at crookedeyebrewery.com. Until the next time that we get together here in the Dark Talk Media Studios, a whole lot of fun about Steely Dan. Thanks for doing this, because you know what a geek I am for the boys.
I'm glad we got to finally talk about Steely Dan. They're a great band, super talented. Everybody who played with them, insanely talented. And you get some great jazzy rock and roll from Steely Dan. And if you're down, you need to feel good with a little bounce in your step, Steely Dan's music will do that for you.
That's right. All right, let's wrap it up until the next episode. For now, I'm Ray Koob.
I'm Marcus Goldman.
And this is the Imbalanced History
of Rock and Roll.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.